There is no better place.
It's time to talk.
The only way to get anything done in Cork is down to Neil Prendergast, you know?
Fair play.
Talk to Neil Prendergast.
That's a Cork threat at this stage, I think.
The Neil Prendergast Show on Red FM.
I just love Cork people.
Conversation that matters.
They do, and be part of our conversations on the Neil Prendergast Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. I'll start with farce and end with farce in the papers this morning, and all both of them have like something out of Dunbelievables or Killing the Scully. The first story is the front of the Mirror today and the inside pages of many of the tabloids, where a member of An Garda Síochána was suspended for 3 years after giving an unclaimed bike to an isolated pensioner during the pandemic. He has now subsequently been exonerated. Now, the GRA, the Garda Representative Association, said that this is a sledgehammer of discipline being used to crack a nut. And that's what it is, nuts. Headline in the Mirror this morning calls it tour de farce, that an officer would be suspended for 3 years after giving a pensioner, an OAP, a bicycle that was inside in the Garda station, wherever it is, somewhere in rural Ireland, unclaimed for a long, long time. So this was during the COVID-19 pandemic. But apparently he shouldn't have done it. The necessary paperwork wasn't completed, etc., etc. I thought that's the kind of a Garda force that we actually want. You know, where it would be kind, and I'm not saying that it's not, of course it is, kind and compassionate, particularly in rural areas, where you'd be looking out for people or helping pensioners and stuff like that. Don't get me started. The bike had been unused for some time, was given to the pensioner because his own was beyond repair and unusable. And then in June of 2020, even the Garda's home was searched before the bike was eventually retrieved off the elderly man. I mean, it's absolutely insane, isn't it? It's just so annoying and so sad to see somebody dragged over the coals for a kind gesture like that. But there you have it. We're never too far, actually, from bicycles in this country, nor cycle tracks or cycle lanes. Nearly 7 in 10 people in Cork support building cycle tracks that are physically separated from traffic, and more importantly, and take Anglesey Street as an example, cycle lanes that are separated from pedestrians. I mean, I walked that a lot. You know, sometimes I park more closer down by Ramen and further down past the fire station and use the parking app that you use, but walk up there. But it always strikes me that, like, if you look at the cycle lanes on Anglesey Street as an example, they are so wide. And then the little area for pedestrians to walk up against the railing is absolutely tiny. So much so that what people are doing is they are walking in the cycle lanes. There's just not enough space. So anyway, I mean, we talk about prioritising cycling. Well, I think it perhaps has totally gone too far. Mind you, the figure now they're saying for Cork, if people walked more and cycled every day, there'd be nearly 70,000 cars taken off the road across the city and county, apparently. But the figure actually, meanwhile, according to the Echo this morning, for people in Cork who actually cycle, even just once a week, is like 1 in 5. And that's only once a week, apparently. It's probably lower if you look at people who cycle daily. But anyway, there you go. There are other things happening inside in the city. I was in there yesterday lunchtime, and it was such a pleasure to hear a busker on the junction of Princes Street and Oliver Plunkett Street. He was playing acoustic guitar to a backing track, but he was playing the most incredible guitar solos. No singing, it was all instrumental, and he was absolutely killing it. He was fantastic. It was a pleasure to listen to. But the reason I mention that is Owen English has a story in the Examiner this morning saying that buskers in Cork will face a 10 p.m. curfew. There will be new noise limits. I don't know if they're going to go around with a decibel monitor or what, monitor the buskers, but anyway. So 10 p.m. will be the cutoff. They'll have to pay €30 a year for a busking permit, and €60 if you use amplification. The large groups, the big bands that you see, and there's a couple of big trad bands in the city quite regularly, that will be €180 per year. They don't say anything about the quality or the calibre of the buskers, whether they can play or sing, or indeed they don't say how many songs they have to learn before they're allowed to busk. But anyway, I pass it on for what it's worth. The Echo's also picking up on stories that we've been dealing with over the past week at CUH, particularly with regards to staffing levels, not to mention, you know, patients' issues and people who have, you know, maybe criticism of, that wasn't all criticism, there were some positive things being said as well about their people's stay in the CUH, but certainly the embargo on hiring in the HSE and the impact it's actually having on hospitals. So the Echo headline on that is, the embargo is ripping us apart, say the CUH housekeeping staff. So that's the one that makes the inside pages of the Echo today. And you don't even get me started then on things to do with health, of course, because we're hearing even more this morning about cancelled surgeries day after day after day in Irish hospitals. RTE makes the front of the papers. I'll come back to this a little later on this morning. There's been 21 recommendations now handed down by the Public Accounts Committee, where RTE have been told to ship up, shape up, tell us what you got, no more hiding, no more sitting on your hands, etc., etc., etc. No more side deals. And I'll come back to those because there's a lot involved in that later on this morning. But interestingly, The Independent says that RTE has received nearly 1,500 emails asking it to boycott this year's Eurovision Song Contest. So the state of play in this one is somewhat Israel to be thrown out of the Eurovision, that they shouldn't be allowed to enter. And if they do enter, then other countries are saying that they should boycott themselves. And that's why RTE have been getting these emails saying that we shouldn't take part in a Eurovision Song Contest that would have Israel as part of the Eurovision Song Contest. But they're looking at the actual Late Late Show for the Euro Song Special, where they got an awful lot of emails. But they said about 1,000 of the emails of complaints about the Irish entry were cut and paste. It was the same content, and they were very, very similar, as in it was the same maybe small group of emailers that were cutting and pasting and sending numerous emails. But I pass it on for what it's worth. And of course, all our politicians will be off and they'll be heading away to foreign climes for the St. Patrick's Day celebrations. And Leo Varadkar, of course, will go to Washington and he will meet Joe Biden. Now, there's been a call from opposition politicians saying that that Leo Varadkar shouldn't go and shouldn't give any shamrock to Biden because they're not doing enough in America to help in the conflict in Gaza. Leo Varadkar says he doesn't believe in boycotting in terms of international affairs, so he is going and will give Joe Biden the bowl of shamrock. But we, of course, have the Frankenwalters who are leading the Cork parade. They are certainly going to be front and centre and above in Dublin. They have given the honour to Mr. Tato. Mr. Tato will lead the parade in Dublin. 70 years of Tato crisps in Ireland. And we thank them for every single bag, don't we? The deliciousness of them. The cheese and onion. I don't know as to whether Mr. Tato will be firing out bags of cheese and onion to the crowds at the Dublin parade, and probably should. Have Mr. Tato going along and then a massive big truck behind him firing out the crisps. But they also are saying that the actual St. Patrick's Day parade could be, and this is what The Independent says this morning, far-right and anti-refugee protesters to target St. Patrick's Day parades for publicity. So parades in, say, the likes of Cork or Dublin or Kildare, Galway, Kerry, being targeted for online special online applications which are linked to groups who have issues refugees being housed in properties, asylum seekers, and indeed international protection orders. But what would be so wrong? I mean, in a democracy, if you had people, I mean, it's all very well to throw words around like far right and anti this and anti that. But if you had people who were peaceful and wanted to protest and say that they were unhappy in a democracy and they behaved, why wouldn't they be allowed to take part in a parade? I would have thought that democracy is all about participation, isn't it, if it's done in a mannerly and behaved way. But certainly one thing that's not sustainable is the welfare rates that are being paid to Ukrainians. Even and I know that there's been changes for Ukrainian refugees coming into Ireland from now on, where they won't be getting 220 a week, but they'll be getting 3880. And after 90 days of state housing, they'll have to find their own housing. But now the latest update on this is the Irish Minister of Protection, Social Protection, Heather Humphreys, has said that there will have to be social welfare cuts for all Ukrainians living in state accommodation because it's not affordable to keep paying the higher welfare rates to over 55,000 in state accommodation. The papers also this morning say that 43% of refugees from Ukraine are now working. The number continues to rise, like 2 in 5 now are working in Ireland, and more Ukrainians that are here, according to the Mail this morning, are expressing interest in living here on a more permanent basis by all accounts. And very sadly, we hear all too often of awful death and awful tragedy in our courts. And you might recall the story of Diego Costa Silva, the 35-year-old who was pleaded not guilty to the murder of Fabiola Camara de Campos Silva back in 2021. I remember that story when it was making the news. The headline in the Mail says, man suffering mental disorder decapitated his wife. And this was part of the hearing at the start of the trial in court. It's quite lengthy, and it's actually... it's even difficult for me to read rather than call out the details in the papers this morning, but that's a live court case, obviously, that will unfold, and will do so for the next couple of weeks. A very sad story then, with regards to a pensioner who up in County Donegal had his power knocked off by a storm. It's a story from The Sun, the story of John Harley, a 92-year-old. So he had no power, it was very cold, so he attempted to light a fire in his farmhouse after the storm knocked out his power, and sadly, accidentally, he set himself alight in his home trying to stay warm, and it led to his death. This is the inquest that's reported in the Red Tops today. And the papers also this morning talk of people who have lots and lots and lots of money. And one story in particular is Asia's richest man who married a girl who came from, in her own right, a multi-billionaire pharmaceutical family firm. And so there's no shortage of your man's worth like billions. He's just worth billions, like $117 billion is what he's worth. And that's why it's no surprise that the wedding itself, which went on for many days, 500 dishes cooked by 100 chefs, an animal parade, performance by Rihanna, all the big guns were there, including Zuckerberg and Bill Gates. Anyway, the wedding cost $100 million. And that wasn't even the official wedding party. This is what they call the pre-wedding party at $100 million. So you got to wonder what the actual wedding itself would cost. Is there a need for that? I guess you could say it's his money. He could do what he likes with it. But in India at the same time, isn't there awful, shocking poverty? And then this video, actually, I saw it on TV news last night. It's the story of a granny who was literally left dangling upside down, 6 feet in the air. She was standing outside a shop waiting for her shift to start, to go into work, but the roller shutter was down. But she was standing too close to the shutter, and then it started to come up, and she got caught in the electric shutters, and it lifted her by her clothing right up 6 feet into the air. She was dangling there before a staff member came running out and helped her back down again. I mean, it could have been an awful lot worse. She's a 71-year-old woman. I mean, if she had fallen from that height and landed on her head, I mean, it looked... puts a new angle on it, you winding me up, doesn't it? And then somebody daftly is suggesting in the papers this morning that people should eat more fillet steak and less sausages, because fillet steak is much better for you than sausages. But who in their right mind that actually likes sausages could ever actually give them up? Like, I just couldn't give them up. In fact, I would prefer a sausage any day than a fillet steak if I knew that I could never eat a sausage again. But they talk about it in the papers today because they're saying the fat content and all this kind of stuff, you know, and how beneficial a fillet steak is, or maybe a sirloin. Not so sure about the ribeyes, because they wouldn't like them either because there's a bit too much fat in them. But Mother's Day is just around the corner. And finally, oh, I've got just one or two other bits to do if you don't mind, but Claudia Winkleman from The Traitors is making an awful lot of sense. But I'm a man, so it's not up to us to say whether this is right or wrong, because Women's Day, or Mother's Day if you like, is all about mammies. So you can spend whatever you want on your mammy. It can be a card, it can be flowers, it can be chocolates, it can be gifts, it can be a weekend away. But she is saying that she would rather her kids to pull their weight more, like empty the dishwasher more often, than lavish her with flowers and cards this coming Sunday. She says, you know, that's what's more important. Pull your weight, be part of the solution, make life easier for mam, as opposed to giving mam a tough life all year round and then spontaneously giving flowers and chocolates of a Sunday. And then there is a row over in County Tipperary between two parishes, Ballinahinch and Killoscully. I mention those because that is the area, by all accounts, that Killoscully was based on, two neighbouring villages. It's where Killoscully was filmed. They're loggerheads because there is a proposal now to sell the parochial house in one parish to fund the church roof repair in the other parish. So you can see where this is going. Big fallout. We shouldn't have to do that. It's not your, it's our church. Well, you know, it's our parish. It's our parish hall. So anyway, it's led to a real life rift between them. And anyway, the story here is they want Pat Short or Dan Clancy to come in and mediate in the middle to sort it out. One parish has the parish hall, the other parish has the church. The parish with the church wants the parish hall to be sold to pay for the roof. The parish with the parochial hall does not want to sell. So they want Dan Clancy to be the man to come in and sort out the row. And he is a good man for, you know, cutting through all of the BS and getting right to the hub of the matter. Of that you can be sure. Here's an example of Dan Clancy in action.
I tell you something, lads. There's only one word I can use to describe what I witnessed out there today. And that's bloody useless. Lads, you're going in on tackles there. And I tell you, the girl guys will do better than you. Exactly. I'm looking at you there. If I hear you one more time saying, excuse me when you're going in a tackle, I'll come out there and I'll bury you myself. What are you laughing at, Ryan? You're the worst of them. You're abroad in that field there, and you're not keeping your eye on the ball. No, what's he doing? He's standing there, gawking into a puddle of water beneath him, admiring himself like a dandy boy. That's when you're going in for a tackle there. Will you pull hard, your man? Pull hard, hard, hard. Let every blow be a funeral out there. I want you to decarve them, lads. They're no relation. No relation. If I stand down there today, you might be laughing at me. But I'll tell you one thing. This time next year will be an eye-opener for you. Because you'll be out playing under 13. And then you'll know all about it.
Let every blow be a funeral out there, he says about the hurling match. I can just see the picture now. The parish of Ballinahinch on one side, the parish of Killascully on the other side, and Dan Clancy in the middle trying to sort it all out.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Yes, indeed. Get involved in the conversation. A couple of minutes' time, Michael McGrath, the Minister for Finance. Thank you to everybody who got in touch ahead of that. But just a quick one, actually, just to set the scene, if you don't mind. Joan, good morning.
Good morning.
Just a quick opportunity to squeeze a call in ahead of the Minister on this upcoming referendum, the two referenda on Friday. Your thoughts?
Well, I thought that the government could do a lot better than they did. They seem to have taken the easy way out for themselves so that they are abdicating all responsibility for the care of children, for the care of disabled people, for the care of our elderly, to the care of families. So we're becoming more and more like America, where I lived for 12 years and I loved it there. But one of the main reasons I came home was because America is not family friendly at all. The cost of healthcare is too expensive. The cost of childcare and education, it's all work, work, work there. And it is completely unfamily friendly, and you get very little help from the government.
Okay, that's the American model, and are you saying we're moving more and more that way?
How do either of these
amendments in the Constitution make us move further away from family values?
Yes.
How?
Because we're making it so that women aren't mentioned anymore, mothers aren't mentioned anymore. Instead of valuing our families, we're making it harder for people to have families because we're one of the richest countries in the world, and yet the government can't afford to monetarily support families or to give people who have stayed home and raised their families and raised tax-paying citizens, they can't. I have no pension. I decided to stay home. I'm probably the last person, the last generation who can make that choice.
Yeah.
And yet I'm being penalised for that. I'm college educated. I'm told I need to go back and work 2 years before I can qualify for a pension. And even though I'm college educated, I'm lucky if I can get a job with basic pay, basic hourly rate, because I have been even though I've worked part-time most of my life, I have spent years volunteering and I've got loads of experience.
I understand that you wish to go back to work and would have to work X amount of time before you can get a pension, and you probably would have to start on a lower rate of pay. But how does that impact on either the family amendment or the care amendment? I mean, if you were to say that part of the care amendment should include or have included from the formation of the state some way of providing for women who wanted to stay at home to raise their children, that would make a lot more sense. That never happened, and it's not being implied now.
Yes, it does say that. The current constitution from 1937 says that a woman should not be forced economically to have to work outside the home. It also says in Article 45 that a woman can work outside the home, the same as a man can work outside the home, so we're not forced to stay inside the home if we don't want to, but that we should be economically able to stay home.
So are you voting no to both of them because you want what was there to be left alone and implemented properly rather than any change?
Well, I don't necessarily want it to be left alone. I mean, I liked the Citizens' Assembly and the Oireachtas Committee's version, which kind of left a protection for carers and left they wanted to put the word carers in there as well, but the government decided to just wipe the slate clean and take all rights away from mothers. Instead of adding the word carers and making it more inclusive, they have taken away rights.
Okay, thank you for that.
I think that's terrible.
Okay, I'm going to move on. I'm going to make those points on your behalf and everybody else who actually got in touch with me over the past couple of days to Michael McGrath, Minister for Finance, Cork Southside TD. He joins me before. Michael, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Very, very interesting, the public's response to this over the past couple of days. Like, one of the things that comes time and time again is that anything that the government is proposing, people are saying you should vote the opposite to because of a lack of trust. And then there's the issues of clarity. It's not clear. And even in prime time last night, the people that they spoke to on the streets of Dublin or wherever they were found it all too vague, couldn't understand it, and many are saying they couldn't even be bothered. And then I looked at some of the referenda in the past, and I think one of the only highest ones that came across was the same-sex marriage at 60%, the abortion referendum at 64%, but a lot of them at 30%. 39%, 40%, low turnouts. Is there even a need to spend all this money on this?
Well, our constitution matters. It is the foundation document, really, for the state. And it is a statement of values and a statement of our general principles. It is not legislation, so it is a matter for the Oireachtas, the Dáil and the Seanad to legislate. And, of course, the courts will have a role as well in interpreting the constitution. But what we have here are two questions, and I know you've been debating them and looking at them in recent days.
Yeah.
And from my perspective and the government's point of view, this really is about modernising our constitution and reflecting the reality of our society today, and also giving constitutional recognition for the very first time of care in the home. That's not currently recognised. We think it's important that it is. And of course, there will be many calls for the government to do more to support care in the home. You know, we have various supports and schemes and payments at the moment, but it is legitimate for people to say that the government should be doing more. And I believe that this referendum, if passed, in giving recognition constitutionally to the value of care, is important, will make a contribution, and I do believe that it will set that overall framework within which legislation will then be provided by the Oireachtas and will be interpreted by the courts ultimately.
Okay,
so that's the care one.
Care's amendment, and the pushback on Lee's side to that from people is that it really and truly is a very dangerous move, people are saying, particularly if they're carers of a loved one or a son or daughter who might have profound disabilities, that the state recognises that the provision of that care by members of a family to one another, it leaves the government, the HSC and state services, completely and utterly off the hook.
But the government has a responsibility as well, and we give effect to that every year in the decisions we make, in the allocation of resources in the budget to different departments, to the HSE, to different organisations who provide services directly. And if you look at what text that proposal is replacing, it's the text about the woman's life in the home, about the duties in the home.
Yeah.
It's language that is, quite frankly, outdated, and I don't think reflects the reality of modern life in Ireland today.
Well, you are aware that it's there is a statistic of 2/3 of women who are working would prefer to be at home, if they could be at home, rearing their children during the child-rearing ages.
Yeah, and that is a legitimate choice that is open to many, but just not practical for many mothers or many families, because of just the reality and the necessity to bring in an income. That's just the reality of modern life. And yes, that people could choose to hold on to the language in the Constitution that references the woman's life in the home and about her duties and so on, but it doesn't really serve any practical purpose, Neil. And I think it would be far better that we give recognition in the Constitution to the value of care for the first time, and that can only lead to positive change in my mind, because what we currently have, I don't believe really serves any practical purpose at this point in time.
Yeah, but then again, that figure that I gave you would represent a lot of women who, for instance, would be very, very happy if they were helped to stay at home and rear their children, rather than maybe the government thinking, or government parties thinking, that all women want out of the home, all women want out of child rearing, and all women want to be at work. That doesn't reflect society.
Yeah, we're not assuming that, and you know, there are just lots of different arrangements in households and families in Ireland today. There are many cases where the man stays at home. There are many same-sex couples. There are just lots of different individual circumstances. And the language that was put there when the Constitution was framed originally, I think, is out of date. And I think it does not reflect the reality or the lived experience of many today.
Okay,
and I think it's more practical just to provide recognition in our Constitution of the value of care. And people might ask, well, what will that lead to? Well, I think it's a very good starting point. And it's all that the Constitution can do is to provide general principles. And then it's a matter for the Oireachtas to legislate. The courts have a role, as always, in interpreting the Constitution. But it's replacing outdated language that I do think is sexist.
Yeah, but okay, so in one regard, yeah, it probably needs to be looked at. But then when you do look at it, you use words like strive. The state recognises that the provision of care by members of a family to one another, etc., etc., and the state shall strive to support such provision. So that's very, very vague. You can strive to do something and fail.
Yeah, but it means you have to make a concerted effort, and you have to make reasonable efforts to support the provision of care. And so it is placing an obligation on the government of the day, whoever that may be, to give effect to the Constitution and what the people, should they so decide, to insert by way of words into the Constitution. So it's not meaningless. It does mean that the government...
Well, you could say shall or will.
Give effect to it.
No, you could say will support such a provision, shall undertake to support, but well, strive is a kind of get out of jail.
I mean, we would argue with the various, you know, schemes and supports that are there, whether it be carers allowance or domiciliary care allowance or disability allowance or incapacitated child tax credit. There are a whole range of different supports and payments there, and this is adding constitutional weight to the requirement now on a government to provide support.
I know you said that they are there and they exist already, but here's what I was getting during the week was, if you had, say, a mother...
Sure.
Or a father or a couple who are minding a profoundly disabled child. They worry that when they die, that the state won't help with, say, residential care in a residential setting, that it could be a brother or a sister or an uncle or an aunt or somebody else within the family would have to provide all of the full-time care. That's a real worry for people.
It is a real worry for people, and as a TD, I deal with harrowing individual cases like that. And you know, the state already has, in reality, an obligation to step in and support, and we need to do more, and we definitely need to do better when it comes to residential places for adults with a disability.
But you won't have to do that. You won't have to do that, Michael, if the provision of care is by members of the family.
Well, in truth, it's by the family, but it's also by the state.
Where's it say that? The state recognises the provision, shall strive to support it, but doesn't say anything in the change to say that we'll be part of the solution.
But the state is part of the solution, okay. And we do that by legislation, we do that by the allocations we make every year in the budget, and the main care organisations, the likes of Family Carers Ireland, have advocated a yes vote, because for the first time ever, it gives recognition to the work of carers around the country, and that can only lead to positive change in my mind, which will actually help. And you know, it was a deficit and a gap in our constitution all along, and it's replacing language that I think is, to most people's, well, I would think in most people's mind, is outdated, with language that I think will lead to positive change.
Okay, talking about language then, if you move to the family amendment, I'm just passing on what people have been saying during the week, the use of certain words, the use of the word durable. For me, a carpet would be durable, or tiling would be durable, or grass in the back garden would be durable. But you use the term for durable relationships, and it waters down, although it is still mentioned within the constitutional change regarding marriage, but it also says other durable relationships. What's your understanding of a durable relationship?
Well, first of all, there's nothing in this amendment that dilutes the status of marriage in the Constitution. The wording, it will be very clear. The state pledges itself to guard with special care the institution of marriage and to protect it against attack. So marriage remains recognised and protected within the Constitution. But what we are doing here is adding wording to reflect the reality of life in modern day Ireland, that over 40% of children are born outside of marriage. We have lots of different family arrangements with single parents. We have cohabiting couples, we have unmarried couples with children, we have grandparents for different reasons who are rearing a grandchild. And at the moment, all of those different family arrangements, and they are families, are not recognised in the Constitution. So then you have to come up with some wording and some description that captures every family arrangement outside of marriage. And that's not an easy task. And so the wording that we arrived at uses the term durable relationships. And, you know, in effect, it is there to describe what is a strong, a committed, a caring relationship of a different kind, which I just described, single parents, cohabiting couples, unmarried couples with kids, and so on, to give recognition that they too are families, because at the moment they're not recognised in the Irish Constitution. It's an exclusive description that we currently have, and we think it needs to be updated.
What about that lady that was on primetime last night? I don't know if you saw her. She is a single parent. She said the Constitution doesn't recognise. She has four children. Two of the children were born while unmarried and are not recognised as part of her family. Her other two children are recognised as part of her family because they were born within marriage. That's quite draconian. Would that remain the same?
No, and she was advocating a yes vote because she wants all of her children to be recognised equally under the Constitution as being part of the family and of her family. And like, what we have at the moment is not an inclusive definition, and we believe that this is much more reflective of the reality in Ireland today. There are lots of different arrangements and different family arrangements, and you know, there have been lots of kind of red herrings raised in my mind about what this could mean or could lead to. Like, the Oireachtas will continue to have the role to legislate. So when it comes to, you know, our policy on social welfare, our policy on taxation, our policy on immigration, all of that is governed by law. And that's what
whose law, though? Whose law, though, Michael? Because this came up a lot during the week as well. Here's a typical text. Europe controls over 70% of our laws and rules. And is this happening because Europe have told us it must happen, is it?
Absolutely not. No. I mean, I was in the various meetings at cabinet committee level where we discussed this, and that was not the reason why we decided to bring forward this referendum. This is an Irish decision. It's our constitution. It's the foundation document of the Irish state. And, you know, every now and then it needs to be updated. And I know people might throw in all sorts of red herrings, try and overcomplicate it. It actually is not that complicated, is what we're seeking to do here.
Is polygamy one of those red herrings? Because Micheál Martin seriously dodged the question on a number of occasions last night. Is polygamy a red herring?
It's a red herring because it's not legal. It's not recognised in Ireland. So, I mean, that's the position in our law, and that won't change. There's no plan to change that, and so it's not relevant.
Mm. So, a man comes to Ireland with two wives. What would happen in that regard? Would two wives be allowed into the country, and lots of children from two different wives? Would they all be allowed into the country? Could you have that happening on a bigger and bigger scale? The marriage
our immigration arrangements are governed by the legislation that the Oireachtas passes, and when it comes to, you know, that kind of scenario, the law of the land and the government does not recognise someone being married to a number of people. So the constitution change and the reference to durable relationship is not relevant. It doesn't apply in that case because the law of the land means that arrangement is illegal.
Okay, so if people had their time over again with the wording, nothing would be changed in that regard. The word strive would still be there, durable would still be there. You think you've got the wording right on both of these then, 100%?
Look, people will always, have a right to criticise and come to a view. And even some of those who are advocating a yes vote would like the wording to be a little different, or would like the wording to be, as they might see it, stronger.
One of those would be Tom Clonan, for instance. You're probably aware of him. He says this, and I know I'm going back again to an aspect from earlier on, says it will give the hate, because of words like strive and the vagueness of it all, it will give the HSE an out in all help for families who live and deal with disabilities. He calls it turning us into an apartheid state. In fact, Michael McDougall isn't too far behind him. I mean, he's a senior counsel and a former politician. One would think that we should sit up and take him seriously when he says a yes vote will bring absolute chaos to Ireland, particularly with regard to family law, taxation and family immigration. That's the polygamy aspect. You just ignore all of that.
Yeah, well, I know Tom Clonan well, and I've met Tom and his son Owen on a number of occasions, and he is a brilliant advocate for improved disability services, and I want to recognise that. But I bring it back to what we're doing here. We're for the first time putting care into the constitution, and Tom and some others would like it to be a different wording and to be stronger. But we currently have no provision for care in our constitution in that circumstance. And I think that this is definitely an improvement. It does put an obligation on the state to fulfil its constitutional obligations. And then we will need to define and give effect to that in legislation. And it is always the case that the courts may interpret and come to a view as to what it means or what it should mean in practice. But the primary obligation to legislate is for the state. And on the lawyers, the main legal bodies, you know, are advocating a yes vote in the referendum. You will always have different views, Neil. That's fine. Look, it's a great thing that we can go out and vote on Friday, and I would just encourage people to go out and vote. And it is our document. It's our constitution. If you vote no and no, then nothing changes. The constitution remains.
Some are saying if people vote no and no, you'll do it again.
Well, look, this government certainly won't be doing it again because we've put a lot of thought and time into this. It's a major undertaking, and I don't see any prospect of a further referendum if there is a no vote. And if that's people's will, then so be it. But okay. I think it would be a mistake, and I think it would be a missed opportunity. We are modernising and updating the Constitution, recognising the reality of different family arrangements that are there now. Why should hundreds of thousands of people in Ireland be denied constitutional recognition at the moment? And they are. And we think that that's wrong and that's unfair. And we think that there should be
why is it deemed in the change that women who did work in the home and stayed in the home and you know, were the support and the backbone in the home, that was wrong and it shouldn't happen, it shouldn't have happened, and it needs change? Isn't that sexist? Isn't it kind of offensive?
I don't believe it is. I think the language that's currently there, it doesn't reflect the reality that in many homes the duties are shared and the responsibilities are shared.
But that's politicians' fault, because people can't earn enough to survive, or the price costs of housing, or even the supply of housing. It's out of necessity they have to do it. So that you wouldn't need all of these changes.
But in the same way that we shouldn't deny a woman the right to go to work and earn a living, we shouldn't deny her the choice as to what to do. And I think that's fundamentally what this referendum
is about. Thank you for all that, Michael. For the little bit of time that I've left, just one or two other aspects that I just wanted to touch on. One is this ongoing fiasco regarding the Conference Convention Centre, of which you guys have pledged €57 million. I was very interested last week that you found €1,800 million to spend on motorways in Northern Ireland. I thought it was April Fool's Day when I heard that one, but €57 million for the Conference Centre already, and there's a chance that you guys are going to give our taxpayers' money to BAM another €40 million. How far are you going to chase that with the public purse?
So we're at a point now almost where a decision has to be made, because the detailed design work has been completed by BAM and Live Nation. They are the project partners. On the public side, the relationship is being managed by...
I know that, Michael. It's a straightforward question. Yeah. I mean, I know the history. We all know the history. I'm asking, are you going to give them another 30 or 40 million? Are you going to give BAM whatever they want?
So the bottom line is that that's not decided. I'll explain where we're at. The detailed design is done. Cork City Council has done their own verification process of that. They have now submitted the final proposal and the final business case to government. That's with the Department of Housing at the moment. You're right, the last commitment we made was up to €57 million of public funding. The cost overall has increased very significantly, and there is a further ask of government to enable the project to happen, and we now need to make a decision. So the Department of Housing are completing their work, and I expect that it will certainly be within weeks they will make a proposal to government, and we have to make a decision then whether we go ahead or not.
That's a simple question. It's a simple question. €57 million's been given. So if they say, and Owen English is on the air with me, he's covering it chapter and verse, there could potentially be 30 to 40 million more. If it was potentially the 30, 40 million more, will you give it, or will you do what some councillors and Lisa and I are suggesting? We need to fold up the tent, say thank you very much, goodbye, build it ourselves somewhere else. Is that even on the table?
Well, I can't give you a government decision that hasn't been made, and when it's made, you'll hear about it very quickly. If we decide to, let's say, walk away and fold up our tent, then the reality is there won't be an event centre for a very, very long time in Cork, because you're going back to the drawing board, site, planning permission, etc. I think if you were starting from scratch, you wouldn't do it this way. There would certainly be a strong argument for the state just building it itself.
Yeah, is it too late for that, is what I'm asking you? And go through the headaches of planning and finding a site.
But it would take years. That's the reality, Neil. And this construct was designed, you know, over 10 years ago when the state didn't have much money.
I know, but you're an accountant. We have no skin in the game here whatsoever. We won't own a single brick nor a board on the stage of it. We will have nothing to see for it.
And that is why if we decide to provide additional funding and enable the project to go ahead, we need to have safeguards in there that ensures that this will be an event centre permanently. And that it cannot change, and the state will have to be protected. I mean, it is a project that would be, I think, a game changer for the city centre. I want to see it happen, but it does have to go through a process, and I know it is painstaking, but we are almost there. We have now got to make a final decision, and I believe we are at a point now where we have all the facts that we need. And I also would need to have certainty as to what is the final bill. Because one thing I don't like is when numbers keep changing, they keep jumping.
But they have kept changing.
You know, what is the
they have kept
well,
changing
have,
from 20 to 57. But like, at what
have,
stage will you say
hasn't
it's
started? You know?
Yeah. Well, at what stage will you say no? That's too much. 100.
Well,
90?
We're at a decision point. So the decision will be made very shortly. I haven't seen the assessment from the Department of Housing, but I believe it's pretty much there, and that will come to, you know, the party leaders, myself, Minister Donoghue, Minister Dara O'Brien, and then ultimately to Cabinet, of course, Minister Coveney. That will happen, I expect, within very, very short period.
Very shortly? Are we talking
final
weeks?
Decision.
Are we talking weeks or months?
Weeks, yeah, weeks.
We've all heard that. Yeah. There's been many false dawns.
Yeah, look, there have, and, you know, I came into government in 2020, and the project had a long history at that point, but we are now at a stage where we finally have detailed design, and that means that the other project partners, BAM and Live Nation, have spent real money in the last couple of years to get it to this point. They have invested in it.
Well, they own it.
As you know. Yeah, but they have invested money in the detailed design, and we now have that, and we have to make a decision. And okay. You know, it's a project I do want to see happen, but I just have to respect process as well, and I expect it will come very, very shortly.
In the coming weeks. Appreciate that. Covered a lot of ground this morning.
Yeah.
Out of time for that. Michael, much obliged to you for taking the call. Michael McGrath, Minister for Finance. Text 0868104106. Wish I had more time. Back after 10.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And we head down into the weekend, of course, and to Mother's Day on Sunday. And with that in mind, all week long, we've lovely, lovely gifts to give away and prizes to give away from the Cork International Hotel at the airport. And you can treat your mammy yourself or that someone nice, someone special to an overnight stay in a deluxe room. Or indeed, you can win it on this program. So we have Sunday lunch for two in the New Yorker Bar at the Cork International Hotel. Overnight stay in a deluxe room at the hotel. Breakfast the next morning in the Atlantic restaurant, and on the night that you're staying, 2 hours private access to the in-house cinema to relax and enjoy a movie with your loved one, all on your own, exclusively yours. That sounds like fun. So to win, text to 0868104106 with your mammy stories. We've had a lot of laughs this week so far, and hopefully today will be the same. We want your funniest, your most mortifying, or your most embarrassing mammy stories or moment. Keep those stories coming. They're a lot of fun. So text 0868104106. We'll come to that after 11 this morning. By text, and there's a lot. Here's the selection. You, Neil, are really pushing the yes vote. Yeah, I mean, I hear that all of the time. People make their own interpretations as to what I do. All I'm trying to do is push back against both sides and trying to be as balanced as I can. So I'm not trying to push anything, to be quite honest with you. I'm just not. But anyway, Stephen believes I am. He says, these fools have ruined this country. If they say yes, I'm saying no. Whenever a politician says, many people will say the opposite. He says they can't be trusted to be transparent or to tell the truth. I'd never vote to erase women or mothers from the Constitution, regardless of the vote, because every single one of us owes our very existence to a woman and a mother. I will never vote to erase these terms. Keep Manaw in the law. It's a good one, a good slogan. PJ says, I'm voting no and no for the reason that if the wording is the wording is very vague. What qualifies as a durable marriage? Well, it's not a durable marriage. It's a marriage or a durable relationship. PJ says, does it cover same-sex relationships? Yes. Even though they can't get married in a church? Yes. And to prevent that marriage from attack, what qualifies as an attack on a marriage? Weird wording. Also, the wording of marriage. Does that only cover church marriages? No. And the way I see it is there's no mention of civil partnership nor same-sex marriage where children either adopted or children through surrogacy to gay couples or single gay men or single gay women. It covers all of those, to be absolutely honest with you, and a lot more besides. And that is not me advocating a yes vote. It's just answering a question. But he does say people are fighting tooth and nail for extra help, extra equipment to look after disabled relatives, children and loved ones. The whole thing looks like a diversionary tactic to take people's attention away from real problems. They lie and they lie and they lie again. Micheál Martin's appearance on Primetime would be far from building confidence in a yes vote. The lady that was on with him chewed him up. Actually, I can't remember who she was. I'd love to know her name. The woman that was up against Micheál Martin last night on Primetime. She is a barrister who has decided not to practice law and has decided instead to give up her career, and she's a stay-at-home mum. I thought she was powerful, and I have no skin in the game, believe me, with regards to either yes or no. I thought she was very powerful, a woman called Maria Steen. But I thought that Micheál did a bit of dodging yesterday. It was an interesting debate between the two, if you saw it. Here's the use of the term Lachico. Haven't heard that one for a long time. These are the Lachicos trying to sneak in hate speech legislation that's akin to 1984 thought control. Shocking words on these amendment proposals. You could drive a tractor through them. I have zero trust in our ruling classes, says Paul. And another few. Sandy says, anything the government want to pass means you do quite the opposite, because they are never to be trusted in anything. So in our household entirely, it's a no and a no. Karen says it took us long enough and worked hard enough to be called a mother, and they want to take it away on Women's Day of all days. This government is a joke. Two more for you. No way I'm voting for the term mother to be removed from the Constitution to appease those who can't accept that they can never be biologically women because they're male. Mary says a woman filed in November when her carer's allowance was reduced for looking after her profoundly disabled son. Why? Because her husband earned over 45 grand. She is citing the current Article 42.1. That's one of the reasons they want to change the Constitution, so powerful women like that, or brave women, I suppose, can't go to court to look for what is rightfully theirs. Text 0868 104 106. Call's on the way.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
That's a smashing text, actually. It's there all on its own on one particular topic I mentioned this morning. The guard being reported and being suspended from duties for 3 years pending investigations because he gave an unused bike that was inside in the Garda station and unclaimed for years to a pensioner whose bike was beyond repair. Interesting text says there must be an awful relationship between the guard who was reported and the guy, or girl for that matter, who told on him. Who honestly would report on a colleague for doing something like that? If the guy who gave the bike was in Cork, he'd be given the freedom of the city. I would like to think so. I really would, because that's the kind of society that I want to live in, to be quite honest with you. But it's an interesting point. Who actually shopped and reported that guard for doing that kind gesture in the first place? I mean, who would do something like that? Anyway, keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. Paddy standing by. John standing by. Deirdre first. Deirdre, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you. I know you're talking to me on your break, so appreciate you taking the time. Go ahead.
Yeah, I suppose really, you know, I'm a mother in the home, but I'm also working part-time currently, just out of pure economic necessity.
Yeah.
My husband works full-time. He also has to work some weekends, and we have children at home. I have one daughter with autism, Neil, and we waited 5 years for an assessment for her, and 2 years after her assessment, there is no support available where we live.
Well, they will, they will strive now. They will strive in the change now. They will strive to support you. Strive.
To say that this puts me into despair is an understatement. My daughter had a burnout, right? Do any parent out there, you have a 15-year-old child who suffered from a mental and emotional burnout because they are not provided with the resources, either educationally or through the HSE, to help them, right? My daughter was at risk for self-harming because of the strain, the emotional, like, burnout and burden, you know? Likewise, I'm a carer. I don't know how I keep going. I just have to try for her. But this has been going on for years. Okay. And I actually despair, Neil, because I've struggled and struggled to try and get support. I had to go to work recently, Neil. And I couldn't say no that day, okay? Because I was afraid if I said no that they wouldn't call me back in another day. I had to leave my daughter at home by herself. I was beside myself.
You must have been very worried and guilty.
With the guilt.
Yeah.
I'm also worried, Neil, as a society, what are we saying? Like, what are we doing? I think we're coming apart at the seams, you know? Should we not put our own first? Like, there comes a time in everybody's life where we just need a bit of support. We just need a bit of help. And I think as a society, we should reach out our hands and help each other.
The Care Amendment, for the first time, will remove all reference to mothers or indeed woman. The word woman will be gone. The word mother will be gone, right, for the very first time. That obviously doesn't sit comfortably with you, because I don't wish to put words in your mouth, but I get the impression that you would prefer not to have to go out for economic necessity and prefer to be raring at home.
Well, Neil, I'd like to have the choice. I would like to have the choice, Neil. And when I do need to go home, like right now, the reality is, Neil, that because of the cost of living in this country, we're trying to put, you know, oil in for heating our home, tax two cars, you know, put food on the table, you know, that I do have to go out and work, help my husband. He already has two jobs now, you know. But I do have a daughter that needs me at home because the state is failing to provide support to us. Like, what else do I do with her? She's a young woman. She in herself, she's a young woman. And what are we as a country saying to her?
Well, you talk about placement, or say, for instance, children who have difficulties, you know, it could be physical, it could be emotional, it could be psychological, it could be profound. But yet they also struggle for all sorts of different healthcare, and they also struggle constantly, and families do, for educational placements for them.
Yeah, well, we had to remove her from school because she wasn't getting the necessary supports in the school. And it was causing her, like, sensory overloading. She was burning out. She was coming home and spending her evening in bed.
So what would be ideal for you if you looked at these proposed changes or Irish society as it should be? How would that look?
Well, look, I have to put my hands on my heart and say, firstly, I had no idea what the Constitution says with regards to someone like me. I lived abroad in the States for many years. And when I came home, Neil, with our family, I felt like a second class citizen in my own country. I struggled myself to get reskilling and retraining and get the support so that I could go out and earn money and pay taxes, you know. And when I found out that the state in the Constitution actually recognised what I was doing at home, that was tremendous, to say the least. Because as a society, Neil, I think we're starting to say to women that we don't value what you do at home. We don't value what you do at home. That's what we're saying.
Well, if that was the case under the old Constitution, imagine what women would feel about being not valued under the new proposal, where women and mother is removed and it's about members of family being special and looking after each other.
I am nearly, I'm a carer. I'm burning out, you know. There are many carers there who are just trying to mentally and emotionally hold it together because of the strain. Okay, we need supports. And the government has, time after time, what we're dealing with is years of inept right, inadequate
okay.
government policies that are anti-family, anti-woman.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Because you said
I want to hold them to account. I want to hold them to account.
You said should you know? I? But here's my final point. You said should I have to leave my daughter at home alone because I feel forced to work outside the home
yeah.
to help to pay our mortgage and
yeah.
put food on the table? What would be the ideal scenario for you? Not working.
The ideal scenario would be that the government actually, out of some sense of obligation, would provide the supports that they're supposed to be providing so that my child could go to school. And that as a family and as a carer, I like that the HSE CAMS, you know, Children with Disability Network Services, that see the supports that are there aren't working. CAMS is it's well noted in the media. CAMS is a disaster at the moment, okay? Like, we're dealing with waiting lists. There are no supports there. So people like myself still are forced to go out to work.
And do you see this? So do you see this change then with regards to care at the behest of families lets them more off the hook as opposed to fixing it?
Totally.
Okay.
Totally.
Okay.
We're moving from any kind. Like, at the moment, the Constitution has a rights-based approach. I, as a woman, as a mother, as a carer, have a right. I have rights. My daughter, who is at home, has rights, right? And the government are trying to just put it all onto someone like me when they are failing to provide for us, okay?
Okay. Okay. Okay.
I mean, the whole thing is badly constructed, you know? It's a mess, and
okay.
it's totally ambiguous.
Thank you, Deirdre. Much obliged to you. Let me stay with phone lines. Paddy, good morning.
Good morning, Niall.
I'm going to try and get as many people on as I can. Yeah, Bart, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
The proposal is to change paragraph 2 of Article 41. And there seems to be a bit of resistance against this, you know, remove the word woman and the words woman and mother.
Their mother, yeah.
I think personally, I think we should just leave it. I see nothing but positive in it. All it does is recognise the invaluable contribution that women and mothers make to society.
Yeah, but vast amounts of mothers are not at home rearing
yeah.
families.
Yeah.
They are working out of, it doesn't say this in the necessity. Constitutional change, they're working yeah. out of necessity, a lot of them. But it,
necessity,
yeah.
and it says in the Constitution that they shouldn't have to do just that,
yeah.
that they shouldn't be necessity, you know, of finances. Necessity.
So it recognises that by her life within the home, a woman that chooses to be in the home should be given
yep.
Support by the state for the common good.
Support by the state.
They couldn't do that. They couldn't do that. That costs moolah, money. They wouldn't be able to.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be able to waste it on other things.
Yeah. But yeah, like I mean, I see nothing only a positive with paragraph 2 of Article 41. But I would wonder like why we could not change paragraph 3 instead, because that reads the state pledges itself to guard with special care the institution of marriage, on which the family is founded. Like, could we not just add a few words to paragraph 3 instead, so that it reads, the state pledges itself to guard with special care the institutions of marriage and all other relationships on which the family is founded? And wouldn't that cover an awful lot of the issues?
It does say that in the proposed change above it. I don't mean to get too technical. I know
no,
the one you...
Say that, no?
It does. It says the state...
Well,
no, but in the other paragraph, the other proposed change in the family amendment says the state recognises the family... whether founded on marriage or on other durable relationships. So
that's the proposal to change on other durable relationships.
Yeah.
And there we have the issue again with what's a durable relationship.
Yeah.
But I'm saying it states in paragraph 2...
A durable relationship would be children born, 42% of children who are born outside marriage in Ireland in loving relationships.
Yes. Yeah fine.
Yeah. That works.
But that's the proposal. There's not a lot of people buying that. So that's why I say, if we read paragraph 3 instead, it says clearly there, the state pledges itself to guard with special care the institution of marriage. And marriage now can be, you know, it's okay. It can be same-sex marriages. It can be several forms in it.
So what should it...
And,
so get rid of the durable... Well, we can't now because people have to vote on this now. So it's a... Yeah, I mean, that horse is bolted. Yeah. That horse is bolted.
Yeah, okay, okay. But wouldn't it have made more sense? I mean, I'm just asking, just a question. Wouldn't it have made more sense to change paragraph 3 instead?
Okay, all right, thanks for that. Keep them coming. Text 0868104106. Neil, you referenced Tom Clonan a while ago. Wasn't Tom Clonan told that if anything happened to him, then his daughter would have to step in as his son's carer? The HSE told him this, so it looks to me that they're already implementing the change they want, says Bobby, and this is referencing Dr. Tom Clonan, who also is a senator himself. There's a lot of others on this. Just wow, your interview with Michael McGrath doesn't convince people of the absolute need for a no vote then. I don't know what will. This is Dara from Blarney. I suppose the more conversations we have, the more opportunities you have to, you know, maybe digest all of the different information. Yet they are closing nursing homes. O'Gorman said that if you don't campaign for a yes vote, you need to explain why. Anything funded by the government will be pushing for a yes vote. As part of a text that says the government of Ireland for the past 10 years have caused nothing but division in our nation. For a constitution that has been acknowledged as being very progressive, why have there been more changes to it in recent years than ever before? There's not one person voting yes that 100% agrees with the proposed language, but they'll accept it anyway, even though it's mediocre. What's become of our great nation? I don't believe that Ireland is mediocre, or I don't believe the judiciary should have the strain of this. The yes side and the government are walking our country into a quagmire. Keep those texts coming. Text 0868104106. Becky, good morning.
Hello, Neil. How
morning.
Are things?
Your thoughts on the upcoming referendums?
Well, Neil, I'm actually a candidate with AIM2. We're the only political party in the Dáil that are calling for a no-no vote in this referendum. I mean, obviously, there's two parts to this. I'm totally opposed to the deletion of the word woman from the Constitution. Now, I know that the way it's referred to in the singular sense, yes, it is a bit archaic. And the text can be updated to reflect modern language, but and become more inclusive, include the fathers as well. But don't be so inclusive that you forget about us, the mothers who sacrificed our lives, who shed blood to bring these children into the world. We are the ones that are at home nursing our babies. I mean, the fathers can't breastfeed their children. We do that. We nurture them in a way that fathers can't. And we should be included in the Constitution.
A woman with children said to me over the weekend that and just words to the effect of, you know, women's place is in the home. Is it outdated or not? Where the reality actually is that mothers, even those who work, make more sacrifices and do more work than men or fathers. Is that fair? Is that sexist? Is that unkind to men and fathers? Or is it true?
Well, include the fathers. That's what I'm saying. We discussed this as a party. You can say men and women, you can say mothers and fathers, but don't delete the only reference to our mothers in the Constitution. I mean, the cheek of them to do this on International Women's Day and just 2 days before Mother's Day, when all our politicians will be taking selfies with their mothers, you know, paying their respects for the sacrifices that their mothers did and that they did the best in rearing them, when at the same time deleting them from the Constitution. Now, and the other part of the text, the Constitution as it stands at the moment, says that the state shall endeavour to ensure that mothers are not obliged to go out and work due to economic reasons.
Yeah.
Now, if that's not happening, that isn't the Constitution's fault. It's the fault of successive governments.
But even the Constitution in 1937 didn't even fix that. They just said, and it was notional, that we'll endeavour, there's the word endeavour in the old Constitution, so that's watery, to ensure that mothers shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home. But that's only notional.
Yes.
They said that nearly 100 years ago, but did nothing at all to help, and it's considerably worse now with economic pressure with regards to housing and debt and, you know, issues regarding trying to put food on table.
Absolutely, and I agree with you, and I say update the text, make it stronger. Like, the government should be obliged to make sure that they are supporting mothers to do the very important work that they do in the home. Yes, update it, but don't delete us. Don't take it out completely. And if you actually delete that second part of the text, even the endeavour part, if you get they want to get rid of that completely, which means they're taking the onus off them.
Not really. Forgive me. They may well be getting rid of the word endeavour, but they're replacing it with the word strive. Same thing.
Yeah. Neil, New Year's Day, I strived to give up chocolate and that didn't last long.
Yeah.
Strive is just as watery. They should be obliged. They should be committed. This strive actually just pushes the onus back onto us in the family to literally, you know, make way, make ends meet yourself. It's just not good enough.
Okay.
And I mean, can I just pull up Michael McGrath? He mentioned there, he said that that the Constitution shouldn't be denying women the right to work. He was inferring that the current wording does that. How dare he to actually go on air and tell these untruths? I am a working mother. Like, I just recently became a mother, and I'm a woman. The Constitution does not stop me from going out and being successful. I've had a very successful career to date. I'm successful in my own personal life as well. Like I said, I just recently became a mother.
Are your children... Oh, you only recently became a mother.
Yeah,
so,
I just recently became a mother. And just stay with me, Neil. I would be worried if the onus is put back on the family and taken completely away from the government, if the government is being insulated here now, what is going to happen? Maternity benefit, children's allowance.
Nothing.
No, but how do you know? Nobody has actually said that.
Because there'd be revolution. That would be just a step too far anyway, to begin with. Like, if you look at it, why should the state be involved in the rearing of families in the first place? I think the answer to that is because people can't do it out of economic necessity themselves.
Well, I want to be able to rear my own family. I don't want the state to have any input in the rearing of my family, but they should support me as a mother in rearing my family. And like you said, women are being forced to, you know, drop their kids off at a creche at 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, travel. I have to travel an hour and a half to get to work. I work in a pharmaceutical company, work all day, come home, do it all in reverse, just to pay our mortgages, our rent, and trying to get by in life. That is the government's fault.
Are you amongst the two-thirds of women, supposedly, this is the stat I've given, that two-thirds of women would prefer to be at home rearing their children than going out to work?
That's not a supposedly. That is an Amharic poll where 70% yes of mothers want to stay at home with their children, especially in the early years. And it's not like we're sitting around watching television all day. We are working in the home.
No one's suggesting that you're watching Judge Judy all day. It's hard work. I know that.
I'm just saying, when I leave the child with his dad, he does feel it at the end of the day. It's a long day's work. It's never ending. You get a break when you're in the workplace. You don't when you're
at home. Okay. Thanks, Becky. Thank you. Let me get on with other calls. Appreciate it. I give as much time as I can to everybody. Back after the break. Calls on the way. Text 0868 104 106.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Selection of texts. Ask me. This is interesting because we need more happiness, don't we? Ask Michael McGrath why he and his government won't give the money for the return of the Cork to Youghal train. It would bring back a lot of happiness to Cork families. I think Irish Rail recently said that it would be doable. I mean, I know that the sleepers are up and the tracks are up, but they could do it, and they could have a track all the way to Waterford, I suppose, and also have a cycle lane and a walking lane next to it to keep the cyclists happy. 20 million on this farce, yet they can't sort out the Mallow bypass. What about some cultures where they have durable relationships with minors? There are men marrying girls as young as 10. Are we going to be looking at that in Ireland as well? Can a man with 4 wives and 6 girlfriends and 20 children get the dole for this durable family when they come to Ireland? Well, Michael McGrath and Micheál Martin even last night said no, because that wouldn't be legal in Ireland. The state does not recognise polygamy, but the Constitution uses the word durable. Surely polygamy would be under durability. And just one or two more. This is to allow the government to help anyone but the Irish themselves. How come there's no money for the homeless and families waiting years for homes and those that are homeless? But they have millions for the non-Irish who give no contribution to this country but drain it. Can he send me some money to purchase a home as I'll be homeless soon? My landlord is selling. Is it fair that we should be homeless and that we will have to leave a job? But non-Irish get new homes and all of the freebies. I don't know about the new homes. How is that right? It's not reality. It's messed up. Here we go again. Michael McGrath making speeches, just using up time. Micheál Martin was on RT last night, and at the end, he attacked the lady he was debating with, calling her a naysayer. He was openly not telling the truth about her opposing the divorce referendum. Ask him about Leo's speech telling us the state should have no responsibility towards the care of the old, the sick or the vulnerable. Or Roderick O'Gorman making a speech on International Women's Day to an empty Dáil. It's waffle, but not actually saying anything. It's a waste of time bringing on politicians. Get rid of this basket case government. Vote no, and we should strive to get rid of this government now. Just call me an irate listener. John was actually watching Prime Time last night as well, and just wanted to pick up on that. Micheál Martin on one side, Maria Steen on the other. John, good morning.
Good morning, and can I say on behalf of the people of Cork, well done to yourself and your staff. This is the third day now that you're exploring in depth into this whole ridiculous referendum that we're, and you're the only one that's giving people a voice. And well done.
Thank you for that. I just hope it's not. I hope on the other side is not too much. And because on Friday we could have a 30 or 40% turnout on the basis that people don't understand it. They don't trust the government, or they couldn't be bothered voting. So we'll have to wait and see.
Well, I reckon there's going to be a backlash anyway against the government, because it's the first opportunity, Neil, that the people have to battle the government, because they believe everyone is talking about the amount of people are coming into the country at the moment, and the strain on already overburdened services, right? So I reckon part of that vote, the percentage of the vote on Friday, will be to battle the government just on that alone.
Yeah.
I also think, I watched a debate last night with Maria Steen, who is a qualified architect and barrister, right, come up against the world's greatest bluffer, Micheál Martin. He actually accused her. He said, you're an ACR. He said, you vigorously opposed divorce in this country. And Maria Steen, in 1995, was only 15 years of age going to school. So why did he get that one wrong then?
That was kind of half clarified. But he did then talk about other referendums that she was active in at the same time.
Yeah, but that's when she became an adult, obviously, like with the same-sex marriage and the abortion, right?
Yeah. But She said words to the effect that Micheál Martin's been in politics for so long now that we need new thinking and we need other people to be making decisions on our behalf, because he's been in politics since she was in primary school.
Yeah, and she was perfectly right on that. He's been along the long time now, and he hasn't delivered. Simple as that. There was nobody looking for these referendums. I saw no women marching in the streets. So this is a supreme slap in the face, right, to the women that choose to stay at home. If they want to go to work, grand, but when they're not work, I was in the supermarket yesterday, I saw a girl who brought her phone in between customers and look at a picture of her two kids. Where did she want to be? Not in that supermarket. She wanted to be at home, but she had to go to work, right? This is a slap in the face for any child psychologist who's telling you that the most formative years of a young child is from 1 to 7, and to have the mother in the home for that is the supreme answer.
I accept what you're saying, but however, in modern day society, there's an awful lot more people involved in the rearing than just exclusively the mother. The father's involved in the rearing. The grandparents do their bit.
Yes, there's no disputing that.
So that's why they want to change it, to recognise the provision of care by members of the family.
As your previous caller, Becky, had said there, right, they could have extended that out. But what they have done, they've attacked the woman in the home and everything that woman brings to the being a home mother, a carer, looking after the kids. It's a tough job. No man will understand the maternal draw of a woman when she's at work, that she'd rather be at home minding her kids rather than strangers bringing them up inside in a crash, right? The maternal pull is there. No man, Leo Varadkar and Roderick O'Gorman will never have a wife at home, so a female wife. So they will never understand the draw of the female to the home and the children.
Ah, but you shouldn't say that just because of their sexual orientation. You should be saying that about any man, then, if you're saying it at all.
No, but these guys, I mean, one is the children's minister, and the other guy is the prime minister.
Well, you're saying as politicians, as opposed to Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach being gay, is that what you mean? They're politicians because they're men.
They'll never have a female at home, so they'll never understand, Neil. Now, look, we are the women in our lives. You're married, no, I've had several ladies in my life, right? But the thing is, no one will understand the maternal draw. The woman conceives the child, carries the child, right, gives birth to the child, nurses the child. No man will ever understand that. And to disrespect a woman in the home is an abomination.
But sure, look at the disrespect to the article that already exists. It says that the state of Ireland recognises that by her life within the home, woman gives to the state a support by which the common good cannot be achieved. But that isn't the case now anymore, because that's like saying, your place as a woman is in the home. We recognise that it's full time for you. It's very important. And then they go on by adding even more vagueness to it in the other article, saying you won't be obliged to go out to work to neglect your duties in the home. So they had to change that, because they've done nothing to help people who want to stay at home anyway.
You're right, they've done nothing, because when Gareth Fitzgerald came on the scene first, going way back, he actually went on the Late Late Show with Gabe Byrne and said he was trying with the idea of paying women at home. The very women now were having a referendum about. Bertie Ahern had a brief flirtation with the same thing, that he was going to pay women for staying at home. That never materialised. But the whole thing is that the women that want to stay at home, they have to be respected. And they just get the carers one in as well, to have the audacity again to put the word strive in there, right? They're pushing the onus of the care back on families. Okay. And it's an opt out for the government.
Okay, thank you, John. I never was an admirer of Maria Steen's views on anything, but always listen to her as she's articulate without ever raising her voice. And boy, was she good. She really rattled me, Hall. He got it wrong about her involvement in the divorce referendum. And when she pulled him up on it, he should go and fire whoever briefed him before he went on primetime. He said continually, he said constituency instead of constitution. Obviously, his brief included red herrings, as did Michael McGrath this morning, says Mary. Okay, thank you for that. Back to the phone line. Sean, good morning.
Hey, Neil, how are you doing?
Good. You've been texting for years now, and thank you for that.
I'm wondering, does that mean we're in a durable relationship?
That's right.
Who knows? Who knows?
I have a durable relationship with loyal listeners, yeah. We're a form of family then, are we, Sean?
Yeah, Friday is going to be an important day for you with the results.
I like it.
I like it.
Anyway, have you any more to say besides that?
it is meaningless term, really, like durable relationship. And the fact they want to insert that into the constitution, like, it shows disregard on behalf of the government for the people of Ireland. It's our most important document. It's the foundational document.
So how are you going to word something regarding the family or a family unit that isn't married? And what word would you use if it wasn't durable?
Well, Maria Steen last night, like, I encourage anyone, find someone with a TV licence and watch the prime time replay last night, because she said the vertical relationship of the parent to the child, that's already covered in the constitution. That they're, like, the proposed wording is not fixing anything that they say is going to fix. It's not.
It talks about family as the natural, primary and fundamental group of society. It talks about the state pledging itself with regards to the special care of the institution of marriage. So the institution of marriage now has 42% of children born outside of it, so it needs updating.
That's an interesting one, the 42%. That's in 2022. But sure, the government made it very difficult for people to get married in the previous 2 years. And the baby isn't going to wait around, like, the baby's coming. So
we all know people who are in loving relationships and have children and have no intention of ever getting married.
That's just part of it. Like, the figures they trot out have to be questioned as well. Okay. But I think the overall reason that the government are pushing for this is that they're failing fantastically at the moment. And instead of improving their performance, which will be difficult, they just want to lower the standards in the Constitution. And to put in this watery language, like, at the moment it says shall not. That's very definite. They want to replace that with strive. Like, an example, if I said to you, Neil, Friday, I take you up to your favourite bar and I pay for all the drink, top shelf, buy all the substantial meals you want, and I say, I shall meet you at 7 p.m. Or will I say, I will strive to meet you at 7 p.m. and then I turn up at 10:30, the bar's closed, and so, oh, sorry, I couldn't pay for your night out there. Sorry about that. That's kind of what the government want to put in, this kind of lofty promise, and they'll end up doing nothing.
Yeah. Now. Okay, good points. Thank you for that. Text 0868104106. I'm happy to continue with calls and texts, for sure I am, and mix it up after 11 o'clock, but tomorrow will be the last opportunity to give it some time, if time is needed, because on Friday we won't be able to talk about it because of the moratorium. Actually, it mightn't even be tomorrow that we can talk about it. It begins tomorrow. No, I think we'll be okay. I think the moratorium starts like 2 in the afternoon. But anyway, if needs be tomorrow, that's good. I'm not on disability, but I am on illness benefit. My mum passed away suddenly last week. I have multiple sclerosis and I suffer from PTSD. I don't know where I stand now with my mum's home. Is there anyone who can offer advice? I don't know that that's necessarily referendum related, but I'm not quite. Your mum's home is a council home, I see. Ah, that's interesting. I've dealt with this in the past, actually. Does this come down to, is it a case of whose name is on the rent book or something like that? I can do a little bit of work on that. That's an interesting one, because I have dealt with it in the past, but it was in times when somebody in the family had to move out of the council home after their parents had died. And I'm sure that somebody listening to me will also be able to help in that regard. I'm on disability. I'm not on disability, but I am on illness benefit. Mum passed away last week. I have multiple sclerosis, suffer PTSD. I don't know where I stand now with my mum's council house. Is there anyone else who can offer advice? Well, certainly I would advise you to do absolutely nothing about it. I mean, in the sense that don't go asking questions of the city or county council on the matter. Not for now, anyway. But just hold tough for a while, because I'm sure somebody's been through this scenario in the past, and I bet that they'll share. Text 0868104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Just a quick few and then a fast call this side of 11. I totally agree with your caller, Caroline. Most women want to stay at home with their kids. Women deserve the recognition that they do a wonderful job. Chaos is the word. Durable relationships are nonsense. Vote no and no. This referendum's anti-women. Why does it sound so ridiculous to you, Neil, that women would give up their career that they worked so hard for? Did I come across as incredulous? When children enter the equation, everything changes for women and men. Priorities change. I've chosen to give up my training, which was up to master's level, to care for my children. Many of my friends are the same. Please don't belittle us by saying our career is more important. It isn't for everyone, says Una. I never once ever said the career was more important than rearing children. I mean, you might interpret what I said as implying that, but I would never say something like that. I didn't even know I sounded incredulous. I was interested in the Amoric survey that 70% of women would prefer to stay at home, but I'm entitled to be interested in that. I'm also entitled to be somewhat surprised at the figure, surely. That doesn't mean that I'm in any way, shape or form anyway, you know what I'm saying. The word family and women should not be written out of the Constitution. In fact, stay-at-home mums and dads should get social protection payments like job seekers to care for their children at home. We must bolster families and mums at home. The benefit for all society is immense, says Sean. You got to wonder as to where we are now in society, I suppose, if you develop Sean's point. Were we in a better place 30, 40, 50 years ago in the rearing of our children? Your thoughts on that are welcome. Text 0868104106. Just to one call this side of 11 o'clock. Kitty, good morning. You have the floor. You wanted to pick up on Becky from A&2. Go ahead.
Yes, I totally agree with what she has to say there. I don't think the word woman should be deleted from the text. I think there should be more inclusion, like adding in father, parent, guardian, if, like, you know, and the wording, like, strive, there, that means they will try, but if they can't, tough cookie. And I come from a one-parent family, and we were always included, and I just think it would be wouldn't be the right thing to do to be taking the word woman out. More inclusion, if anything.
Even though the way that the word woman or the word mother is actually used in the Constitution, because they are both used in the Constitution, but it would be something they never delivered on in the Constitution. They say that if you are at home, and that's the Constitution is saying, that's where you should be as a mother. You shouldn't have to be there and struggle economically. But people did and do, and they did nothing about that. So it doesn't need to be updated. That needs to be taken out, because otherwise you have to say in the new proposal, we'll pay you and support you to rear your children.
Well, I think women should have a choice as well. And I don't, I have sisters who have children, and I don't think they've ever been left out with the Constitution the way it is now. I think they're very successful in their careers, and they have raised their children successfully. But I think if they were to take this out and not be more inclusive with the father and the parent, that it's just, I don't think in the long run anyway, I think there's going to be uproar. Like, they're not, it's very vague. There's no definite, you know, there's no obliged now. Becky mentioned that, and I think that's a very good word to use. They should be obliged to instead of striving to.
So if say, for instance, 40, and if we're lucky, maybe 15%, 50% of the people who can vote actually do vote, 50% would be a good turnout, I think, for this referendum, I would imagine. Do you believe that the 50% that do vote will vote no?
I think if they, I'm not too sure what people are going to
but
vote.
Let me just give you an example of what I mean by that. This is Wednesday, and from Monday, and I'm not in any way, shape, or form controlling the caller traffic on air, but it seems to me to be, from what I'm doing here for 3 days, overwhelmingly no.
Could you repeat that?
I'm saying that on the basis of the people that I've had on air since Monday, or the texts and the emails that I'm reading out, it would appear to me that the vote on Friday will be overwhelmingly no.
Well, that's good. I think that's a good thing. I definitely will be voting no. I'm a young woman, and when I do hope, like, to have children and everything in the future, that the government would support me working in the home. If that's what I was to choose to do, I think women should have a choice. I come from a very large family, like myself, and my mother raised us by herself, and the state supported her to do that. And I think that that's
How did the state support her to do that?
Well, she had money to raise us when she couldn't work. We had the option of home help, like when she did want to go back to work or anything like that. If she thinks, you know, I think, like, I feel like women are going to be at a disadvantage if this.
But what did women get? Just thinking of my own mother, what did they get to support them? They got, apart from children's allowance, they don't see any other support.
But yes, but in the new wording now, saying that they'll strive to support and all of this, like, will that even still be there? Will you have to fight to get that now?
But like, I'll strive to give you 100 euro and post it to you on Friday, and you'll have it on Monday. But I'll strive, and then when I don't do it, I'll say, well, I tried. You know what I mean?
That's exactly.
Wishy-washy.
Exactly. Okay. The point, yeah. Okay. It's not good enough.
Okay, thanks for that. Much obliged. Text 0868-104-106. Back after 11.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And keep your texts coming. Your funniest, most mortifying, your most embarrassing, your funniest mammy moment. It could be about yourself, or it could be about your mammy. And we want to hear those funny stories. So keep them coming by text to 0868104106. We have the Cork International Hotel on board again this week. Every day this week, Sunday lunch for two in the New Yorker Bar at the Cork International Hotel. You'll stay stay overnight then in a deluxe room in the hotel. You'll have breakfast the following morning in the Atlantic restaurant, you and whomever you choose to take with you, Mammy maybe, and then 2 hours private access to the in-house cinema all to yourself to relax and enjoy a movie. So it's a lovely, lovely event for Mother's Day. Indeed, you can book it yourself if you want to take your mammy on a special treat, because Sunday lunch there is a joy to behold. So keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. Good news from what I can see with regards to that short text that I got from somebody who obviously is very, very worried. I'm not on disability, but I am on illness benefit. My mum passed away suddenly last week. I'm so sorry to hear that. I have multiple sclerosis and suffer PTSD. I don't know where I stand now with my mum's council house. Is there anyone who can offer advice? Well, Kevin checked out the Cork City Council handbook on inheritance, those that would... I'm not talking about wills now or anything like that. I'm talking about the home. It is your family home. It may well be a council property, paying rent on it, but it's the family home. So here's what it says in the handbook. On the death or departure of both parents, the tenancy will normally be given to a son or daughter, irrespective of the number in the family, provided that he or she has been registered as living there for at least 2 years immediately prior to the death of the tenant whose name is on the book, etc., etc. So that must come as a relief to you. It goes on to say, Cork City Council will have regard to the housing needs and natural rights of the brothers and sisters and sons and daughters who have resided in the household for a period of 2 years or more. Each case, why do they say that then? Each case will be examined on its merits. I mean, if it's a son or a daughter, family member living in the house for longer than for 2 years, or more, then they get to stay in the house. So that's good. That's kind. That's compassionate. That's the way it should be. I hope that that comes as some relief to you. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. As regards to polygamy and family reunification and the upcoming referendum, you said it already, Neil, when you discussed the jury TV show. It all depends on the judge you get, says Richie in Toker. I actually think, yeah, I think when I was chatting with Kevin, we did say that you can get a good judge or a bad judge and stuff like that. But it also can depend on the jury that you get. And that TV show, The Jury Murder Trial on Channel 4, is worth watching. Texter says, myself and my partner watched the jury murder trial over the weekend. I'm very interested in what you thought the verdict was, as my partner and I had very different verdicts. Well, I bear in mind, I know that there are some people who still haven't seen it all, and I leave it alone till Friday. We can talk some more about it. But I think it's fair for me. I think it's okay for me to answer the question as to what I thought. I'm not going to say what the jury thought. But somebody asked me there, I'm very interested in what you thought the verdict was or should have been. I thought that the verdict should have been murder, to be absolutely honest with you. And the reason, and not going into too much detail for spoiling it for people, but the reason I thought murder was it wasn't explained to me enough during the trial, if I was a member of the jury, as to how a big lump hammer like that got into the house. How did it get from the factory outside, from the workshop that he had outside? He did a lot of welding and he made sculptures and stuff like that. No, I'm not. You don't have to turn me off. I'm not saying anything about what the. I know you haven't seen it, Kevin, and I'm not going to tell you what the jury decided. I'm just saying my issue was that it wasn't explained enough why and how the hammer got into the kitchen, because the hammer ultimately is what he used in real life. It's a real case. To kill his wife. So my impression was, at least, and maybe that's not good enough for a jury, I don't know, is that he had started to strangle his wife. And then she turned blue and purple and things like that. And then he stopped, right? He stopped. But he went to the workroom. He went out to the workplace. He went out to where he kept all of his tools and everything. He came back in with the hammer? Like... it was part of a set of hammers in the workshop. So it wouldn't necessarily be in the kitchen ever, would it? So that to me kind of made it premeditated. Does that answer your question? What the jury said, I'm not going to do. I'm not going to go there. Not just yet, anyway. Back after the break.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I'm giving it away. Yorick says, stop giving it away or I'll hit you with a hammer. I'm not finished watching. I'm not saying anything about what the jury decided. There are two juries. I'm not saying that. I was asked a question as to what I thought. I mean, like, come on. It's like
you just can't help yourself, like.
What did I say?
I'm not going to talk about it, but...
Somebody asked me a question.
I think you have a compulsion.
No, I think it's like some sort of... Okay, tell me, what have I given away?
You've certainly given away about the hammer, about why the hammer wasn't brought back, and you were like, pay close attention to that now.
That's fine.
I don't want to know. I don't want to know big close attention to anything. I want to take it on its own merits. Like, you know, don't give the whole thing away now. I'll come to the end of it and I'll say, jeez, if I'd only...
Firstly, you should have had it all watched by now. Rather than frustrating people.
When did it come out?
Last week.
Ah, jeez, Neil, like, we have busy lives. I'm busy here, like. You know, I don't have 5 hours to sit down and watch, or four hours, whatever it takes.
At the same time, this is very serious. It really happened. Mm. It was a real case that was judged by a jury. Mm. Okay, so let's not take from the impact of this being a very, very sad and shocking death.
Well, yeah, but it is a fascinating experiment. I would like to think that the family of the victim were contacted.
I won't say anything about that because they'll be spoiling.
But I would imagine that if it was in my shoes,
get home and watch for the bloody thing.
But just don't spoil it for at least a week. Like, just give people
Somebody
a chance
says there,
to watch.
Thanks
it.
For telling us the verdict, Neil. How in the name of God did I give out the verdict?
Richie says you can't help yourself. It's like death by a thousand cuts.
No, I just somebody asked me how I would. Look. All right.
Just put a cork in it for a week, and I think after a week or whatever, you can spoil away at your heart's content. But like,
you wouldn't be
going on the radio in the middle of the 80s and saying, "Geez, I couldn't believe that Luke was your man's father all along." Do you know, like, you just have to leave it for a while. Leave people watch it. Like, people have to get around to watching.
Do you watch Titanic? The movie. Like, you couldn't be accused of a spoiler in Titanic by saying the luxury massive liner sank.
No, but that's...
Like, you guys kind of know.
I know, but...
I haven't made that kind of a clanger.
No, but it's different. Like, that's a real life case that didn't... Like, this is a case where what was I going to say? I would like to think that if I was the victim's family, then I would like for the fact that the case would be used as an opportunity to investigate how accurate juries are.
I have loads to say on that, but I can't.
You can't and don't. But I'm just saying, if it was me, I would, if it ended up bringing about a real investigation into the merits of a judicial system and the juries.
I can't say anything. Okay. I want to say something here, but I can't.
Okay. Just leave us.
Just one or two more, and then I'll do other business. And this is a massive response all week to this, and really, really varied and interesting texts and calls. And I pass this on. Do you know that if a married couple separate, a man will not have to pay maintenance, as they can say a woman's place is now not in the home, so they can go and find a job and support the children themselves, as in the ex-wife? What if they have additional needs, etc., etc.? Again, the door might be opened for this, but I don't think that this would be deemed as being an actual consequence of a yes, yes vote, would it? That it would allow a married couple to separate, the man to just walk away and not have to pay any maintenance. Firstly, there's an awful lot of men would be very happy to pay maintenance and would be very happy to support their children, even if a relationship broke down. You know where I'm going with that. Who doesn't have a waiting list in this country or have to fight for anything, no matter their situation? Unless you have money or have connections, anyone who's not getting what is necessary, they say, can take the government to court. But who has the money to do that? Changing the words only helps the government to provide us with less for us Irish and more for the non-Irish. And that, to me, is the real truth. Our so-called government doesn't give one flying flick about Ireland or its people. Anyone who can see that now at this stage is as bad as that lot. One final one. So if my son falls, hits his head, gets brain damage, now the family will have to care. The family would want to care anyway, I think. But anyway, so now the family would have to care. So that means that it would be me in my mid-50s, or his brother who works full-time, or his 18-year-old sister. exclusively. Meanwhile, the government will strive to help. Could you imagine having to fight in court for that kind of help? My mother is in her 80s and is practically housebound. What help could she do? And what help would I get? Thank you for those questions and those texts. Keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. More on that on tomorrow's programme at some stage, I'm sure of that. But I got a very interesting email with an update from issues involved in the issues involving the chaos in the CUH, particularly in housekeeping. I'm a member of the housekeeping department in CUH. I'd like to thank you and the team for covering our plight. We received a letter on Friday from our union on the back of coverage that your station gave us. In the letter, we were advised that they are now looking at bringing in agency cleaning staff to assist. And once the embargo is lifted, the agency staff they bring in will be brought in under the HSE umbrella. So that's what's being proposed. Interestingly, there is some correspondence between SIP2 and their members. And SIP2 were obviously in some kind of correspondence with management at the CUH, because management raised the issue of the recent publicity on my programme, I would imagine they're referring to, because nobody else was talking about it. Management raised the issue of the publicity of late pertaining to the housekeeping department at the CUH. Management advised that there is a communication policy in place within the HSE, which all employees are obliged to abide by. Management have stated that they expect staff to adhere to the policy and advised that the CEO's office is to be contacted in advance of any staff giving interviews about their workplace via media outlets in the public domain. So that is directed at me and this program, and at staff who would call me to talk about their life or indeed the conditions of their work or their worry for patients. Now, that is very worrying. That's a muzzle. That's a muzzle, and that's the only word I can come up with. That is a muzzle. And I am very thankful and very much obliged to all of the staff members who did actually contact me and did talk, whether it was on the air or by email or by text, even though they had that kind of veiled threat hanging over them. So I do thank you, and I appreciate it. Mary, good morning.
Good morning.
Just picking up then on our conversation of late regarding CUH, your thoughts?
Yes. I have somebody who is in CUH at the moment, who's in a high dependency unit, and I'm very concerned because I have been in, and when she needs to go to the toilet, she's able to go, but she needs to get somebody to help her out of the bed. And she's not getting that help, and as a result she is soiling herself and wetting herself, and it's very distressing, really, you know.
Yes, it is. You say that she's been left in her own excrement with no one there to bring her to and from the toilet, and because of that. She has soiled herself 3 times in the past week, and you have been doing the washing.
That's right, you have done it. I have, yes, indeed. I have got, when I go in every second day, I have the bags. I bring home the bags and do the washing.
Do you ask for any help when you're in there with regards to warm water or towels or, soap or cleaning utensils?
No, because actually when I have been in, she hasn't been in that condition, but for example her niece was in yesterday and found her in that condition, and her niece went and asked the nurse in charge to come in and change her and clean her up, and the nurse said she was the only nurse there and she couldn't do it. And her niece ended up going over to Wilton and getting her new underwear and pajamas.
So is she wearing a pad, do you mind me asking? I know this is very invasive with regards to her privacy.
I don't think she is. I don't think she's. I'm going in now and I will check on that.
She's 83 years old. She's been in for the past week. There's repeated issues with soiling, but nobody thought that if she can't be brought to the toilet.
She's not incontinent, actually. It's just that she needs help out of the bed. And when I was there the day before yesterday, we were looking for an alarm, you know, that she could ring. She's quite clear in her mind, but she couldn't. There was no alarm on the bed.
Why was it taken away?
It possibly was. Maybe it's, I presume it's a high dependency unit now. I'll check on that today again. But
you would think a high dependency unit would have a bell on the cord on the wire?
We were looking and I couldn't see it and she couldn't see it, but I'll check on that today.
So there's no bell, so she used to wait to see. It's almost like begging, can you please bring me to the toilet?
Yes, yes, that's what it
and
is.
And whose role would that be? A healthcare assistant or a nurse, is it?
Well, I presume it would be anybody who would take her, really, but they're not coming to take her.
Okay. And you say this isn't the first time that you've had stories like this regarding family members, is that right?
No, that's right. Yeah, well, 2 years ago, somebody else that I know was there and was left all night in a dirty nappy in this case, you know, and it wasn't changed until the morning.
And somebody with a broken leg.
Yeah, and then she had been in during COVID herself, the lady we're speaking about, and she said the same thing existed, looking for somebody to help her out of the bed, nobody there, and she did get bed sores that time.
And what do you and she make of society in Ireland in 2024, that our healthcare system is as bad as it is?
Yes, yeah, it's. I mean, there's so many good things about it, I suppose, but I think the dignity and respect, I would say, in this case, is lacking, you know, if they leave people. And she's only one, I don't know about others, but if they leave people in that condition, it's dreadful. And sadly enough, she was a carer all her life herself, you know, and she would be very clean. And very fastidious about her.
Yeah, and that makes it very undignified for her to have to go through this without help.
It's really bad. It's really
at a time when she needs it most, isn't it true?
It is, yes, yeah. It's very sad, really.
Shocking, 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 shocking. Thanks, Mary. Sorry to hear that. Shocking. It doesn't surprise me anymore, though. Text 0868 104 106. Call's on the way.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
No, if something worked, why not bring it back? I mentioned that because for many years, one of the most successful things, and they did an awful lot of successful things down through the decades at the Cork Opera House, was Summer Revels. I see you smiling. I'm even smiling when I say the words. Summer Revels, right, started in 1971. They thought it might run for a week, and it ended up running for 7 weeks that summer, and the next, and the next. And it continued for 21 years at Cork Opera House. Now, it stopped then, and back in 1995, they did a kind of a reprisal tribute in 1995 of Summer Revels at the Opera House. And that was a resounding success because many of the original cast came back to do a turn. It's coming back again. And there's a call out now for people who might like to be involved in it. More about that in a minute. But when I ever think of Summer Revels, firstly, I always thought it was like a pantomime in the middle of the summer, which has got to be a great idea anyway. And then I would think of the likes of Chan Maya, Billa, Paddy Comerford, the Montfords, people like that. But what always amazed me was that the level of professionalism of it was off the charts. And we were just looking at some audio of the old Summer Revels back in the day. So enough of me. Here's an example. No introduction needed.
Anyway, do you know, it reminded me of a story.
Yeah.
You see, St. Peter was watching an All-Ireland final.
Yeah.
And he got a bit of a brainwave, right? So he picks up the phone and he rings the devil. And he says, come here, he says, what about a football match between heaven and hell? So bothers the devil, but you have no hope of winning.
Yeah.
Why not, says St. Peter? Should we have all the best players up here? Maybe he's the devil, but we've all the rest down here. We can see you're another expert. But just greyhounds I like.
Greyhounds?
What do you mind now? I have a greyhound bitch.
Yeah?
And she's the fastest thing on four legs, Jack.
Yeah?
Entered her for races all over the country. She won every one of them. So he entered for a big race above on the Western Road, although she was pregnant and very well on it to drive. So the race starts off, she's out of the track like a bullet, way ahead of the rest of the field, but halfway around the track, she stops dead and gives birth to two lovely little pups.
What a way to lose a race.
Who said anything about losing it?
Ah,
what she gets. Chases after the feed, passes them out one by one, and rocks home in the easy winner.
And I wrote the 2 points.
They came in second and top.
It wasn't all about the comedy. Happy days. Stage full now of performers there, all wearing the best of gear to fit the mood and the era involved. Summer Rebels is making a return, lads. We got Eileen Gleeson, Cork Opera House CEO. Eileen, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you doing?
What a great idea. Whoever came up with it, was it your good self?
Well, it was a few of us now, to be honest, Neil. Like, we've been talking about this for many, many years. I suppose in the context of what we do in the Opera House, like, we're always building on the shoulders of giants here. And I think Summer Rebels is a real key example of how we do that, you know?
Are you old enough to remember it, though? Forgive me for asking.
I'm not, but I do come out of a house where I have parents who think so fondly of it, who talk about it a lot, you know, and it's actually that generation who feel a really amazing sense of ownership over the Summer Rebels. And that's what we're trying to get that energy back and
build
something for 2024.
Well, some of the giants that you're talking about sadly are gone. The great Billa, the absolutely superb Paddy Comerford, sadly Michael Toomey. Delighted to hear that Frank Duggan is still hale and hearty. Are you looking for the next generation of these kind of individuals, is it?
I think so, Neil. Like, we can do that in the Opera House, and we've seen that happen now with our panto, in that it gives a platform for new talent to come forward and try and learn their craft and hone their craft. And the Rebels is kind of the next generation of that, you know?
Yeah.
We're out there now at the moment, like, auditioning professionals, singers, dancers, actors. We're also, and this is really key actually in us making a new Summer Rebels, we're talking to people in the community who have something to offer, who deserve the platform. We want them on our stage and we want them to be part of the show.
And this is the call out, isn't it? It's for, can you sing, can you dance, can you act, can you play a musical instrument, are you a magician, a ventriloquist, a comedian?
Exactly. Do you throw batons? Are you in the majorette? Are you in a BMX group? Do you rap with your friends? Like, what is it that you do that you think deserves to be seen by the people of Cork? And we're really casting the net really wide here now, Neil, because actually, like, that's what the Summer Rebels can do, is like really bring the community together. And if there's one thing that Cork can do well, it's come together in the Opera House to support each other. You know, we've seen that happen time and time and time again over the years.
Well, the talent is undoubtedly out there. It certainly is. In fact, definitely. I think you'll get too many offers to be able to fill a show.
Well, the idea now is that we'll have plenty of opportunities for people to take part, because they might come and do one or two shows, and then somebody else, another group will come and do another two shows. So it's going to run for 3 weeks over the summer. There'll be ample opportunity for people who get through the audition process to be in the show, and really great opportunity to, I suppose, hone their skills and solidify what they do and really think about, like, how they're going to get their work out there, you know, how they're going to get their talent out there.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, thank God there is still some opportunity to revisit some of the shows, because people recorded some of them. I mean, the audio may not be great, but at least they're up online so people can reminisce and get an idea. Like, would Frank Duggan be interested in are you talking to Frank about maybe doing something as one of the original mainstays, I'm curious, or Eileen Nolan or anybody like that?
We did talk to him, and as part of, like, we've been working on this now for about a year already, Neil, and as part of our building of the show, we did meet some of the really key mainstays of the show, and in one sense, we're kind of looking to them for their blessing and asking them to help to guide us and to kind of nurture us in our efforts to make this thing, to bring this thing back to life. But in another way, it's about allowing us to kind of be free to make a show for 2024, which is not kind of an easy thing to do, because you're trying to honour the historical significance and the absolute brilliance of what they did in the 70s and 80s here over 21 years. And like to acknowledge that and honour it, but also kind of drive it forward and make something that's kind of for.
I think it's a win-win for everybody. And I just like the idea that if it works this year, you will continue it as a summer tradition, right?
You said yourself, Neil, like it's like a panto in the summertime. I mean, we want to be open. We want to be filling our house all year round. And if we can do that in a way that puts Cork on the stage and gives us something to laugh with and gives us something really positive for families to come to us, then we're delighted to do
singing that, and dancing and having a laugh, exactly, and telling jokes and stuff. So if there are people, because the clock is ticking now at this stage, have you been getting a good response heretofore? Because I think the deadline is Sunday.
Deadline is actually Tuesday, the 12th of March.
Oh, okay, you've extended it a bit. Okay.
We've extended it a few days because we wanted to make sure that anybody and everybody, and there might be people now, for example, who are getting ready for the St. Patrick's Day Parade who are like, oh, we've something ready to go. We're in a float in St. Patrick's Day Parade. Let's get it on video. Let's get it in.
Yeah.
They're the kind of people who want in those things. So about a 90-second video, if that's possible, into revels@corkoperahouse.ie with 2 to 3 sentences about your group, and that'll get you then in the running to the next stage.
So regardless of what your talent is, and I'm sure there are many listening that have a talent, 90-second video of your act, 2 to 3 sentences about yourself or your group, and send it all to revels@corkoperahouse.ie, revels@corkoperahouse.ie. Deadline is Tuesday afternoon. I hope that you get a really good response and are getting a very good response, and that it'll be a fantastic production. Would it be possible to talk again a little bit closer to see what kind of shape it's taking, or perhaps talk to some more people regarding what's planned over the next few months, maybe?
Absolutely, and over the next couple of months now, we'll be announcing who's involved and who's on, you know, who's going to be in the show and who's writing the show and that kind of thing. So we're coming close to that stage where we'll be able to share more information about the show. So that'll be a really good time to talk as well. And it would be great then to also, obviously, to bring, you know, Frank and anyone else who's up for talking about the Rebels of Old. I mean, that's just always such a lovely thing to hear about.
I think it's a wonderful thing. Bring it on. Can't wait for it to happen. The casting call is out there now. You have until Tuesday. Thanks so much, Eileen. Do stay in touch, all right? Appreciate it as always. Eileen Gleeson, the Cork Opera House CEO. So you, if you have the talent, don't be shy now. If you have it and somebody said you're good in the past, then you must be. Maybe. As long as it's not just your mammy, because mammies will always tell you you're good. Revels@corkoperahouse.ie, a 90-second video of your act and a couple of sentences about yourself. And get it in, please, before Tuesday. That's the deadline, because the return of summer revels can only be a good thing. But here I am again. I love dull bit of reminiscing. This is very short, but it's the great Bill O'Connell, and we're at work.
Not speaking he was a mare to drink. And if you kissed him, you wouldn't have to worry about germs. He was blind most of the time. Will I ever forget the night I rubbed a drop of whiskey on his bed back? And he nearly broke his neck trying to make it out.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
You can text 0868 104 106. Just very quickly, with the time that I have left to do as much as I can do, I just want to have a chat with Sarah, who's in a bit of a difficult situation right now. Sarah, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Good morning, Neil.
Are you all right? Are you okay?
I'm in fierce pain, but my daughter's gone to the pharmacy to get extra strong painkillers.
And what's the pain? What's the pain from?
The pain is coming from my right hand side, from my ribs right to my back. I have the leather blanket on, a hot water bottle up to my back. I went to the South Dock this morning at 2 o'clock in the morning with my husband, and there was another woman in a wheelchair there with her two daughters.
In pain, yeah.
In pain, and she was really in pain. I really felt for that lady, because when she came out, I said to my husband, I said, why isn't she getting an ambulance? And I went into the doctor, called me in, and he said, I said, well, what can you do for me, please, doctor? I said, and the tears were just coming down my eyes, cut the pain. And he said, I can't do anything for you. He said, we don't even have paracetamol here now at the moment. We're out of paracetamol.
At South Dock?
At South Dock.
Out of paracetamol?
Out of paracetamol. Short staff, short medication. He had nothing stronger than Tramadol, which he gave me, because he said, I have to give you something because there's no pharmacy open now.
Okay, that didn't, did that make any difference to the pain?
No, okay. No. I and had you, to bring my...
Yeah, go on.
Sorry, Neil.
Yeah.
But I'm 2 years waiting for a... waiting for a scan. And I'm a private patient.
What condition do you, what condition do you suffer with?
I was diagnosed with bowel cancer back in 2013. And it was bad. I went into hospital with pain in my tummy. I was rushed to theater. I had stage 3 bowel cancer. I had to have a hysterectomy after that. I was in and out getting scar tissue removed, things removed from my breast. Breast specialist to specialist.
Okay.
I know what it's like to be in hospital
and
waiting on a chair.
And is the treatment is the treatment for cancer over now, or are you still living with
it
cancer?
Is.
Yeah.
No, it is, but I can't get a colonoscopy anymore because they can't get the camera to go up and over to the other side.
So do you, what I'm saying is, did they get all the cancer?
They did. Yeah. He saved my life that night.
Okay.
I would have died that night.
Okay.
And only for my husband sent to the nurse, you better get a doctor, he said. My wife... there's something really wrong with my wife. I pleaded with the nurse to get a doctor. And she says, no, you're going to be okay. You're good. There's no need for that. And I said, please, I said, I'm going to die tonight, I said. I still, when I think back of it all, I still get very emotional. But she got me a doctor. The doctor came down to me because, oh my God, he gave me morphine. And my bowel was so distorted, it was going to burst.
Okay.
And the team that were looking after me left me there for the weekend. And this was a Sunday. And they were back until Monday. So only for the doctor, though, it was on my specialist. I would have died that night.
And but they ultimately then picked up on bowel cancer.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But I was in hospital 5 days.
I know.
For my specialist, and they were just pointing it off.
Pain. And so.
Yeah.
So you've lived with pain since then.
Yeah, and I have a very high tolerance for pain.
Well, you sound as if you're in agony right now.
Sorry, that's the only reason I'm ringing. It's because when I'm listening and seeing on television about people suffering out there and people who are public waiting, it's a disgrace. If I'm 2 years private, what way are the public patients that need the service?
And would that CAT scan then identify the source of the pain and make you well?
Yes, pain.
But yet, have you been living with this chronic pain for 2 years now?
I had no life at all. I lost my brother 3 years ago to cancer.
And did they say it's out? I'm so sorry to hear that. Did they say it's out, Doc, really, that they had no paracetamol?
No paracetamol.
They run out of it.
They've run out of it, and they're very low on pain relief. He only had given me a couple of tablets because he said...
Have you any prescription for any stronger painkillers given to you by your GP or anything?
Most of all them, I used them all. So my doctors have to write me more now, send it to the pharmacy of my daughter's gone down to class.
I know. But your painkillers, they only dull the pain, they don't fix the problem.
But they're not even doing the pain, Neil. I didn't even sleep since yesterday. I can't sit up. I'm lying flat. My back feels as if
I'm
off a tree.
Is that each day? Is that every day of your life? All day, every day, all night?
I could be grand one day, and I could be like last year. I was supposed to go out with my family, my mum, and
You know, my mum's been through a lot with losing my abused brother. He's only 56.
You don't really get out then, do you?
No, I have no life at all. No quality life at all for my family. For my husband, you know.
And
it's just...
Why would you, with private health insurance, be 2 years waiting for a scan?
Because they just keep saying, there's a backlog, there's a waiting list, they can't do anything for me. And anytime they send me to A&E, they just send me back over, or even an x-ray. But I need that scan because I can't have a conus. Because my bowel is so...
I understand how those things work, but this is a scan. This is a scan. It's a scan. I'm saying scan, not scam, but private health... health insurance where you can get a scan. Oh, yeah. It's not surgery. Yeah. It's not admission to a hospital. It's an appointment for a scan.
Yes,
for 2 years.
I could even go to the Mater in Dublin or the Mater. I can go anywhere. I always made sure I had the best insurance, and I'd leave everything go, but I'd never give up my health insurance.
And how do you feel about that now when you need it the most? Because it isn't cheap.
No, it's not cheap. It's costing us. I think we're paying. I think for the family here, we're paying about 9,000.
9,000?
Yes, it's a good policy.
You have a damn good policy if it's 9,000.
It is. It's the best policy that we have, and I wouldn't surrender it.
But what's the point of it? Like, would you get a CAT scan faster if you were a public patient?
I don't know. But I know if I didn't have private insurance 10 years ago.
I know, yeah.
I wouldn't be here now.
I know.
I would be dead now, Niamh, and that's the truth. And that is hand on heart. And I know for a fact, 100%, I can tell you, I wouldn't be here now. Because I remember when it happened to me, and that's what this pain always brings me back to.
Would you go into... and get private medical assessment in the Bonds. Get your doctor to refer you into the Bonds.
They can't get me in. He tried about 6 months ago and they couldn't get me a bed.
It's not a bed, it's a scan.
I know, they can't. You have to.
In, out, go. On the same day.
I know. They can't. I have to go in as a patient my specialist is not...
I'm not doubting you. I don't doubt you for a moment. Incredulous, though, but I don't doubt you.
I know. My specialist isn't in the Bonds, you see. He doesn't do the Bonds.
I don't know how that works, to be honest with you. I don't know how that
my
works. Have you been to Mater Private? Have you been to Affidea?
I have been to the Mater Private and I had procedures.
Have you gone to... Well, can you not go through your GP into the Mater for the scan? You're paying $9,000 a year. Like, they'll be well paid for it, the Mater. I mean, VHI will pay them well for it.
Oh, I know. And it's just that the last time I went in and I had a camera down in the Mater, and I never got the results of that. And the doctor that done it said to me, don't bother coming back now, she said, for a follow-up. You're a very complicated case. You're better off go back to your own specialist.
I don't know anything about any of that, but you need, nobody should live, and I know that there's other people, nobody should be living with chronic pain. On a scale of 1 to 10, what's your pain?
My pain now, Niamh, without a doubt. And I say that now. My pain is 11. And okay, telling you, my phone is shaking in my hand.
Yeah, that's inhumane.
And I've said, all they're doing is
waiting for the scan.
No, I'm just saying you need, I don't want anybody's names incidentally, but you need a proper pain management program because your quality of life, sure, that's
yeah.
If you were a dog, a vet would treat you better than that.
Oh, Neil, my daughter has three dogs and my God, she only rings her vet. And he's Declan there in the village.
I know Declan the vet, child. You'd be seen the same day if you were a dog.
He is absolutely a magnificent person.
What are you going to, I mean, like, do you need help in this matter? Or do you want to highlight how bad our health system operates?
I want to highlight and I want this government out. I don't want them, if they knock my door, I don't know if I could restrain myself. And I'm not that kind of a person. I want to be out with my mom or visit my mom, and I can't even do that. And mom calls to me once a week, and when she's comes up to Cork. But what I'm saying is,
she must be heartbroken to see your daughter like that.
Yeah, and after burying her son, my beautiful brother.
I know.
And. I was supposed to go out Friday for lunch. I couldn't go out Friday for lunch. This pain.
I know.
And the tears are just coming down my face.
People will be absolutely heartbroken to hear your shocking treatment. They really will listen to this. It shouldn't surprise us, but when you hear people tell their own story, it just brings it home time and time again, the state we find ourselves in.
You know, now, Neil, I really, really do admire you, and I listen to you every day.
Well, that's,
and I'll tell you something. I know when I tell you this, you know who I am. I remember one time my daughter went up to you. You pulled up in your beautiful car. You had the roof was down, and a beautiful summer's day, and your beautiful daughter Cathy. And Luke, I used to play with Amy, and she said, now I had her warned. I said, don't you dare tell Neil Prendeville that I listen to him every day. Mm-hmm. Just don't now, because I'm a very quiet person that way. Mm-hmm. And she did. She came in home. And she said, I told Neil that you'll listen to him. I wasn't able to look at you. I was embarrassed.
Yeah, don't worry.
But you know
that.
What? I met you only once.
All right.
And it was a privilege.
Okay, well, it's lovely chatting to you. In spite of the pain or the situation you find yourself in, you have a wonderful family with you who obviously are doing everything they can.
I have a magnificent family.
I'm so sorry that you find yourself in so much pain. I don't know if anybody's listening. I don't know if somebody may well be listening to help you with your pain or help you with your scan. I hope that there is.
Neil, yeah. I'd like to just say your father was a gentleman.
Thank you for that. Well, you're very kind. You're very kind. Very kind.
I knew him coming in to visit you, and he used to always say hello. He was a beautiful
old stock.
Man.
They're all stock. Listen, Sarah.
Oh my God.
Listen.
The best people came from the north side.
I hope,
tell you that.
I hope that by sharing your story helps in some way, and that it might move a mountain to get you the help that you need. All right.
I just want to be back.
And of course you do.
Enjoy my life.
Of course you do. You're entitled to that.
Listen, my daughter is getting married in July.
You want to be able to go. Be part of the very special day. I know.
I need to be doing things with her.
I know, and there's a lot of planning involved in it. But if you're incapacitated with pain, you can't be part of all of that. Listen, I'm going to put you back on hold. All right. You never know who might be listening. I don't know if we can help in any way, shape, or form, but it won't be for the want of trying. All right. Okay, Sarah. Look after yourself. Stay there. My apologies to everything else. I think that call needed to be heard. I really do. And anything else that was overdue, including callers that were ready to come on air with regards to our Cork International Hotel giveaways, I'll give it an awful lot more love and attention and TLC in the morning. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.